Today on Coffee Talk, Grace Krause and I sit down to talk about beauty, specifically through the lens of the Notre Dame fire, and whether or not the church is a big, fat hypocrite for building beautiful churches. Let's pour some coffee on that.
You're listening to Coffee Talk with Father Brad.
So this is my first cup of coffee, so that's why I'm a little groggy.
This is mine too. So, are you excited about our trip to West Coast?
Excited is an understatement. I'm very excited.
Me too. I keep listening to Ben Rector's Green. Mm-hmm. I keep checking out the sister's website.
I've been researching books about Junipero Serra, the California missions. I'm trying to find a book that I want to read, like as we go down the coast.
Cool. So. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be awesome. If you're out there listening, me and Grace Krause and a friend John Bim are doing an epic West Coast exploration, Oregon Trail, if you will. We're going to take a schooner, a caravan of schooners up the Oregon Trail until we hit the Northwest, looking for gold.
What?
I don't know. What I wanted to do for this coffee talk is address something. It's a little bit out of or old news, right? Old hat, old news. Notre Dame was on fire and all the ensuing controversy over it. But I thought it was still important to talk about and kind of re-look at what we can learn about beauty, about the church, about the world, about modern culture and their understanding of the place of beauty, the place of churches, because of the aftermath directly after and subsequently after the immediate response. I just wanted to talk about that, even though it seems like it's a little after the fact, but man, a 900-year-old church burned. It's still pretty big news.
It's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, so where were you, Grace, when you first heard or saw the news about Notre Dame?
Well, it was sort of the icing on the cake of a difficult school day. I was teaching, and ironically, my church history class, I only have one section of church history, and they came in, and it was while they were in my classroom that my brother texted me and said Notre Dame was on fire, and I was like, excuse me, what? And so I immediately looked it up and pulled it up on the screen and put it for my students to see projected. And they were like, wait, is this real? And I'm like, yeah. And they're all like, wait, what? And so we sat there and watched it for a few minutes, whatever newscast they had at that point. At that point, the fire had not been contained. So it was still scary that we might lose the whole thing. So it was rough. I think I cried.
Yeah, I teared up. I mean, I was in New Orleans at a funeral of a family member, elderly cousin or great uncle, and I was doing the funeral, and so it's all family, right? And so we're sitting, you know, at the wake before, and my dad comes up and says, hey, look what's, or someone comes up. So one of my family members came up and was like, hey, Notre Dame's on fire. And I thought of Notre Dame in New Orleans. Oh. I was like, oh no.
The seminary
where I went to school. But it wasn't. And then I just, man, the pictures were so foreboding. It was just
haunting.
Yeah.
Something the spire, so, like the fact that like the architecture of the spire was so like, I don't know what the right word is, like lacy kind of. It had like all these intricate like lines and details and stuff, and the fire kind of like going throughout that was so, it was like oddly beautiful, but it was like also very haunting.
The church itself is a symbol of faith, right? And a faith in Western culture and such an ancient city and a very Catholic country and Catholic city. So for it to be on fire, just kind of, it's a gut punch to the stomach. I don't know. So that's what was going on in my heart. I kind of even prayed with it, you know, but the more I prayed with it, and everyone has their Facebook response, right? Right after. And mine was a picture of me and my mom, in front of Notre Dame. And I said something like, you know, this, the church, the faith, the gospel, our relationship with God is more than just this building. And if it gets rebuilt, it's probably going to be rebuilt, but, you know, we were not meant for here. And guess what? There's many churches who have fallen. I almost kind of had a memento mori attitude about
it. I had to kind of accept that memento mori attitude because I think I called you on the way home from school that day and it was a gut check. I was like, I really am so sad about this and I don't know why I'm so sad about this. Like, I had never seen Notre Dame in person. And so maybe part of it was like,
yeah,
thinking that I would never be able to see it, you know, but I mean, thankfully they, you know, it was saved, mostly. So they're able to rebuild. But like, I was just kind of accepting the reality that all things pass away except for God, you know, and that's a difficult thing to accept, but it's also necessary because anything else would be an idol, you know, the icon would turn into an idol. And so that was the danger, I guess, in my own heart that day. And then it was like, by the end of the day, I had accepted it and moved on. But it was in a moment, it was like this tension between idol and icon. Like,
yeah, we as Christians, we're not Notre Dameans. Mm. We're not Our Lady of Pisces. We're not St. Philippians. These are all my parishes. We are Easter worshipers. No, we're Christians. Okay. So like Christ is the temple, the new temple, right? I would destroy this temple and in 3 days I will raise it up again. And he meant his own body. Mm. Ooh, I just thought of that, you know?
Yeah. So that's the real temple is the body of Christ, you know?
Which was saved.
Yeah.
By Father Fumier.
But also can never be destroyed because it's everyone who's united to Christ, you know, it's the people, it's the Eucharist, it's Jesus himself, you know,
which was the beautiful part about even when it's burning and the embers are still glowing and it's nighttime and the young people are on the bridge or across the Seine River and they're kneeling, praying. Mm-hmm. The young church of Paris kind of showing us,
that was
guess
really
what?
Cool.
Yeah. This is not the end. This isn't the end of the world. In fact, look at the future. Look at right now. Look at the faith. Look at Christ. They're singing Our Lady Hail Mary in French. They're singing the Ave Maria, which is Notre Dame is named after Our Lady. It means Our Lady. It was a good hope. It was like a good wake up call and an opportunity to evangelize. You know, the first initial response by everybody mostly was compassion, which I thought was a very human response and that the world responded like, oh man, this is important to me. Even if I'm not Christian, even if I'm nominally Christian, even if I'm lapsed, even if I'm falling away, even if I'm Muslim, even if I'm right, no matter who you were, you're like, wow, this is important.
I think that speaks to the fact that beauty is a universal language, you know, that like, no matter who you are, you can relate to beauty when you see it, you know it, you know, and it moves you. I think there's a lot to be said with evangelization through beauty.
I also think that there was a little bit of what I call selfish sorrow. You know what that is, Gracie?
Please tell me.
Selfish sorrow feels good to be sad about something with a bunch of people. Yeah,
I think that's a phenomenon that happens for sure.
You know, all our loves have selfishness wrapped up unless it's perfect, right? Unless it's Christ-like and we're like literally dying. We're on the cross. We are, you know, no greater love has anyone than to lay down his life for his friends. That is the greatest love. And so all the other loves, even that one itself, we can mess up, but could have selfishness. We got to recognize that. So like that kind of compassion or whatever, is it self-serving? Maybe it was a little chance for people to post their little tourist pictures of Notre Dame, including myself. Mm-hmm.
Have posted one if I had had one.
Yeah. It's like, guys, oh, this was me on a boat in the Seine River 2 years ago, toasting Notre Dame. Oh, how much of a tragedy. And then a week later, that same person is saying, why do we need to rebuild this? Brr? So the immensity of a response of compassion and empathy and sorrow for the loss of, or they didn't know how big of a loss, but somewhat of a loss of Notre Dame, matched with the outrage a week later and the complete turnaround of like basically popular culture in its response shows me that maybe there's a little selfishness tied up in that first initial response.
So what did you see? What did you see like on Twitter and, you know, wherever else?
I think this is our listeners probably saw this as well. I saw it. I saw a lot of memes or Facebook posts just kind of presenting a false dichotomy between, and this, and really it was about the, and maybe this is why it happened. It was about the raising of funds immediately by billionaires and millionaires.
People saying like, oh, I'm going to give $1 million for the reconstruction of
$200 million. And it adds up to over $1 billion. And as soon as that starts happening, then people start presenting the false dichotomy of, wait a second, this is a beautiful building. Why can't we feed the world, right? Can we end world hunger with this instead of build this church? And so it presented one of the great, I guess, questions of modernity that's thrown into the face of the church, into the face of Christians, or even just people who love beautiful things. What is the appropriate relationship between the poor, feeding the poor, the social outreach of the church, and also the church's beauty and building beautiful things? Is it immoral to rebuild Notre Dame with $1 billion? Rather than feed the poor. Go Grace.
No, I think Jesus himself answers that question in the gospel. You know, it's whenever, what is it? The story of
Judas.
Mary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mary pours the oil like onto Jesus, you know, and Judas is like, oh, this money could have been used for the poor. And Jesus is like, she recognizes something greater, like that the poor will always be with you. Is that the same passage when he says, yeah, the poor will always be with you. But like the presence of Christ is worth spending everything you have on. It doesn't say, I mean, obviously Jesus is saying in the next breath, like you have to serve the poor, right? So there's clearly not meant to be a dichotomy between the two things. Jesus and his presence are real. And I guess it, on a certain level, it may not make sense to someone who doesn't believe in the real presence of Jesus. You know, to me, a cathedral is, you know, a throne room in a certain sense. It's something that is pointing to the presence of the Lord. And so if you don't see that, then I guess it would be a little bit harder to make sense of it. But also, we were talking about this last night, that the cathedral is for the poor as well, you know?
Yeah, there's a subtle classism in that statement. Like, why would you rebuild this beautiful church, the art, place of worship, rather than giving to the poor? There's almost a subtle classism, as if the poor couldn't appreciate the art, and as if the poor don't need the art, right? As if all the poor needs is their physical needs met. That's what you deserve. But the really rich people, you know, can enjoy this art. And it's like, wait a second, where in the world can those who are impoverished, can the poor of a city see, have their hearts lifted, worship God, be let in to see beauty, to witness beauty, other than churches, right?
Or
where it's,
I mean, certain museums have entry fees, you know, and there's these other, you know, palaces or wherever where you would have to pay a lot of money to be able to go there. But the cathedral is free, you know.
Yeah,
it's for
free
everyone
to get into the main nave. I did research about this because everyone was all uppity after. They're like, well, you had to pay money to get into the National Cathedral in Washington. I was like, that's Anglican. The Basilica is free.
Yeah.
Sucka. And I looked up Notre Dame, the main, you know, to go to mass, to go into see the Rose Window, to go in the main nave is free. To go up to the bell tower costs money.
Yeah. I think it would be, you know, if there are churches in the world that charge people to go in, I think that's wrong. I think that shouldn't happen. You know, I understand like asking for donations, you know, 'cause we have to keep up this beautiful place, you know, but, yeah. So,
well, I think when that happens, you've become a museum.
Yeah.
You've become a museum and that's what you think. Yeah. So yeah. We got to really guard against that.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that it should be for the poor. It should be for everyone. And
so I saw this article on The Onion and it was fantastically insightful, as The Onion is sometimes, and Babylon Bee and all that. Mm-hmm. But this was a great title and I want to break this open because it's very philosophical. Okay. This is the headline, and this is an Onion article. So it's not a real article, but it's actually pointing to the tension between, I guess, a secularized Western culture, especially like a French secularism with like all their, existentialist philosophy of the, 20th century and 19th and 20th century, and their love of Notre Dame, and how do you rectify these? So this is the headline: Paris vows to rebuild Notre Dame despite cosmic absurdity of seeking inherent meaning in fleeting creations of man.
I say that one more time.
Paris vows to rebuild Notre Dame despite cosmic absurdity of seeking inherent meaning in fleeting creations of man. And so let me read a little bit of the article. Following a massive fire that destroyed significant portions of the Catholic Cathedral, Paris officials vowed Tuesday to rebuild Notre Dame despite the cosmic absurdity of seeking inherent meaning in the fleeting creations of man. We will come together as a nation to reconstruct Notre Dame. I'll stop that. No matter the fundamental irrationality of imbuing mere man-made structures of stone and wood with any sort of deeper meaning in an existence where entropy is the only universal truth, said French President Emmanuel Macron in a press conference, adding that the government had already received more than $700 million in pledged funding for a restoration project that will serve as but a momentary impediment to the corrosive sands of time. Notre Dame was built, destroyed, and rebuilt over the course of hundreds of years, and we will rebuild it again, only to watch it to decay once more, for indeed that is its fate, as it is the fate of all man's works, like Sisyphus pushing the boulder up the mountain. We will endeavor to fix the cathedral despite all empirical evidence to the contrary, in a world which demonstrates time and time again that there is nothing real to be found in worshiping that ersatz edifices that serve as a sorry facsimile of real human connection. We expect this completely arbitrary and fundamentally meaningless process to take 10 to 15 years. Taking a drag on a cigarette, Macron added that French officials mourn the Catholic relics and artworks lost or damaged in the blaze, even if they are but false idols and profane images merely serving to fracture the spiritual connection one might devote totally to God.
I think earlier in the article, it's partially true, that these things will pass away. So we're talking about earlier that, they are meant to be icons. They're not meant to be idols. They're not gods. They're not going to last forever. We're not going to last forever in a certain sense, like our souls and our resurrected bodies obviously will, but, but like this earth, the way that we know it now. And I think that day was sort of a reminder of that, that like here's something that is 900 years old and yet we could lose it in a couple of hours,
Yeah. It was almost a gift though. Like it was a gift because, and I think that's what the article is pointing out. What the article is pointing out is this almost nihilistic, enlightened philosopher, secularist view of like there's no intrinsic beauty in the world and entropy and everything's going towards destruction, almost like a Sartrean, which he was French, right? That's why he talks about
yeah.
And that's a prevailing worldview. But for an instant, for one instant, while something that's so
everybody's like, wait,
something in my heart. Like if you are truly a materialist, secularist, atheist, and you see Notre Dame burning, you should feel nothing. You should be happy because it is like something is dying that you think should die. But the majority of the world, I think, saw Notre Dame burning even at the beginning, right? Because the secular atheism can kick back in after a week, right?
Yeah.
The materialism could kick back in a week. Your prevailing worldview that you've decided to think about the world, this is how I view the world, can kick back in after a week. But for an instant at the beginning, when you saw it, you said something is that this is is horrible because beauty matters, because God matters, because something at the heart of who I am is being burnt.
Yeah, I think that we have these fleeting opportunities of grace, you know, that like something twinges our heart or something speaks to us in a moment, in an instant. And like, it can go away so fast, right? If we don't pay attention to it, and then it's like nothing ever happened and didn't actually change us, you know? It makes me think of Flannery O'Connor saying that her stories were about the offer of grace most often refused, or something like that. That in her stories, there's this kind of moment, this like, even if it's just like an internal thing, like an earth-shattering moment of grace. And the majority of her characters are like kind of caught in that moment for a minute, and then they walk away and go on with their lives, you know, and they're not actually changed by it, because they don't lean into it. They don't actually think about it longer. They don't actually ponder it. They don't actually say like, wait a minute, does this change everything, you know? But some of them do, but the majority of them don't. But I think that's such a, I don't know, commentary on the human experience in general, that like we all have this, we have to sit with these moments that inspire us or pull on our heartstrings and say like, wait a minute, why did I feel that? Because if we don't, then it's over, and a week later we're moving on with our lives.
That's why we need beauty, I think. Was it Dostoevsky or one of the other Russian dudes who one of his characters said beauty will save the world?
Yeah, it was him.
Okay, cool. Dostoevsky. Take that, Father Josh. I can pronounce it right.
I didn't know that's how you pronounce it.
He couldn't pronounce it. He asked Father Josh. He was like, Dostoevsky. Anyway, that guy.
I am with you, Father Josh.
So, but we need it because, and this is why we should rebuild Notre Dame. This is why it's important. This is why it's important for all people, even the poor. We need it. Because beauty is the last frontier of evangelization, I guess the easiest route of evangelization, because of relativism and because of moral relativism. So relativism about what truth is and can we even know truth? And then especially when it comes to moral. So if God is good and God is true, we can, because of what's happened in the world and philosophically, we can reject that. But beauty is the only thing that's immediate, meaning it takes no mediation. We don't have to sit there and think. We see it. It comes through our senses, and then boom, we're experiencing God, because God is beauty, right? If beauty is a transcendental, which is questionable according to some Thomas, but Neo Thomas would say that beauty is a transcendental, meaning it's like it's an attribute of God himself. So God is beauty, and when we experience something beautiful, we can be, it can cut through the crappy philosophy we receive, the crappy formation we receive, all the hurts and pains or whatever, all the sins we've committed, and we've hardened our hearts to truth and to goodness. But beauty, you walk into Notre Dame, you walk into something, you hear a symphony, you hear Palestrina Sicut Cervus, and something happens in you, and that's why we need beauty.
Yeah, I mean, there's been tons of people throughout the church's history that were converted by something like that, you know. Bishop Barron talks about this all the time, this whole evangelizing with beauty thing, and he talks about people literally looking at the rose window of Notre Dame and being like converted, you know. And that's, it's for some of us that seems like absurd, like how could that happen, you know? But it is sort of a personal thing, I guess. It's different from person to person, like what is going to affect them at the right time. And it's maybe like a combination of things, you know. It's not like, it's not just the one moment, but maybe there were thoughts, maybe there were feelings, maybe there were things that sort of led up to this point, and this sort of crushing experience of beauty was like the breaking point, you know? And like, wait a minute, this is something more, you know?
And what will heal the ills of the world, like poverty, systematic injustice, genocide, what will heal it? Not $1 billion from billionaires, right? How about a converted heart of the Christian people, yeah, of the world? Look, we can't throw money at these kind of issues. Like, we feed the world for a day with $1 billion. We feed the world for a week. But guess what happens? The systems are still in place. We need a Christian world. We need people to be converted. And then we can do the work of a Christian people. We can do the work of Catholic social doctrine. When we have a converted world, we're not going to fix it. And this is what happened in the scriptures, right? Judas said we could sell this and give it to the poor so that he could have, so he could steal from the money bag. That's what it said in scripture.
Yeah.
Right. And this is the critique of rebuilding Notre Dame. And then the next weekend, what made over $1 billion in game. Avengers Endgame. Yeah. Like we said, well, let's sell this and give it to the poor so that we could go to Endgame.
Yeah.
So that's literally what, so look, we need to convert our hearts and convert the world, and then we can serve the poor.
Amen.
You want to go around the world?
Yes.
Do you really, or are you just,
cause you I mean, I feel part. Like I kind of, I don't hate this part, but I feel like I have to say yes, right?
That is true. I mean, you can walk out of here. I could do it by myself.
I don't want to do this. Father,
hey, what do you, Father Grace.
Nope, that's not my name.
Not Veteran Grace either. Hey, by the way, everyone, hear ye, Grace Krause is no longer Veteran Grace. She didn't like it, so don't call her that.
I got assigned a nickname, you know? I mean, I guess that's how nicknames work, but still.
That is literally how they work. Have you ever been in Vacher, Louisiana?
I mean, I have been in Vacher, Louisiana.
Have you ever heard the nicknames? You got Pop Chop, you got Dadu, you got Pigeon. What else? There's all kinds of ones. It's great.
Oh, well, I'm sure.
How'd you like the title for Our Lady of Guadalupe White, our last episode?
Me?
Yes.
You really want to start this? Open this can of worms?
Maybe. How'd you like it?
I mean, I haven't listened to it yet.
The title.
Yeah, I know. But it's, I mean, I think, okay, we're going to go here. I think it's clickbait.
And I agree. And I have no shame by using clickbait. Raise your hands out there. Ye who are listening, if you were clickbaited. Okay, put your hands down, everybody. And they don't care.
Okay. Well.
If you care, you can email me. If you want to side with Grace Krause, you can email us at quizzicalpapist@gmail.com or go to the Facebook group. I'm going to put a poll on the Facebook group about whether you thought the title was clickbait and you didn't like it. Okay. Around the world, I want to highlight there's been two listeners in France since we were talking about Notre Dame cathedrals for the past couple episodes. We've had a little France pop up in Paris, particularly two listeners from Paris.
Nice.
One from Paris, one from Lyon. So yeah, we want to just give you a shout out and say, we're sorry that this has been happening to you. I'm sure it was very traumatic for you. We cannot understand. It's your cathedral. But thanks for listening, and know we're praying for you, and we have been, and all of our churches are praying for y'all for many weeks. So thanks for listening. I also want to shout out a cool, you know, who's also listening, Grace?
Who?
Moscow.
Moscow.
Idaho.
Oh.
You're so disappointed.
Disappointment. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh.
Wait, tell us about Moscow, Idaho, whoever's out there listening. Why is it called that? Are there a lot of Russians there? Like, what's
do you
the
drink
deal?
Vodka?
Tell us about it.
Do
I've never
dance?
Been to Idaho.
Do you get into a squat and throw your legs out in front of you and dance that way? Are you communist?
Oh my God.
Do you like Putin? Singapore. Also, there's there's a lot. There's two listeners from Singapore that I noticed, and I just want to give you a shout out because y'all are cool. If y'all want to make y'all's international voices heard, just reach out. We understand that we can be a bit America and Louisiana on this podcast. Help us be truly Catholic and universal. Reach out to us at quizzicalpapist@gmail.com. To the Patreon. Okay, this week we got two new patrons, actually three, but two of them are one Patreon, and that is Jared and Courtney Quivido.
Yay! Wait, you guys can't be patrons because you're making me have to be a patron because you have your teacher salaries. Of course, I guess I have two. I only have one.
That's true, but they also have a baby.
Well,
they literally
come
have
on, Quivido's.
Cut. It's a dollar a month.
I know. I'm just kidding.
So, Jared and Courtney Quivido, thank you for being patrons. They're at a Pilsner. They They're leading the way, showing you that it's a dollar a month. Everyone out there, if you're listening, you could give a dollar a month. It'll be $12 a year. And you give, if we have 50 people do that, we'd meet our goal. Woo! Okay. And then also we have Trista Brazon from Vacherie, and she is a Brazon. See, the Brazons have a cool, and she is $5. She's an Abbey Ale. So nice. She'll be on soon. And the Brazon name, guess what country it hails from?
Mm. How's it spelled?
Brazon.
France?
Nope.
I don't know.
Portugal.
Uh-huh.
So there's this guy way back in the day in Portugal, and he jumped on a boat and he went to New Orleans, and then he jumped on a train and he rode it until he got to Vacherie. Then he jumped off the train at some point at Vacherie, and then he immediately found a wife.
Wow.
That's how I picture it. Like he's like, oh, I'm from Portugal.
Oh my gosh. Accents.
And he jumped off. He probably saw the woman like from the train. He probably saw this like beautiful.
Hark, a wife.
A wife. And then he just jumps off, marries her, has five kids. She unfortunately passed away. But he saw another wife, married her, and had five more kids. And that is all the Brazons in Vacherie. And now there's a huge family. So thank you, Trista, for listening. She is about to start her own podcast, and I will let y'all know what it's called whenever they launch it. If you want to be a patron, get a shout out, join us on the show, be a guest. You can be a $5 patron. If you just want stickers, $3, one. If you just want to be a decent human being, just give $1. And go to www.patreon.com, patreon.com/quizzicalpapists. And finally, reviews. We have one more review, 5 estrellas. This is from Zoe Jumanville. And she says...
Oh, wait, I know her.
I know Zoe too. She's from New Roads, right?
I think so.
Convert.
Is she?
I believe, yeah.
Huh.
Zoe says this, I happened upon Father Brad's podcast a couple of weeks ago, and I thoroughly enjoy it. I'm able to listen to podcast while I work, and I find myself giggling a lot while listening, which becomes a gateway to telling all of my coworkers about why I'm giggling. Keep it up. Hope to see you at a concert soon. We always see each other at like pseudo Christian
festival or something.
No, yeah. like pseudo Christian concerts, like Dave Barnes or Ben Rector or the Oh Hellos. It's like everyone's looking around at these concerts. It's not technically Christian music, quote unquote.
And yet
you look around, you're like, there's Campus Crusade for Christ people. There's Christ the King. There's three priests over there. There's a nun on stage. Not really. Thanks for joining us. And anything you want to say, Grace?
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to some other podcasts because it had to do with our topic. I found a podcast recently, just this week, actually. It was recommended to me, called Risking Enchantment. It's just getting started as well. But Rachel Sherlock is from Ireland, and she has a lovely accent. I like listening to it.
It is nice.
And her whole podcast is about Catholicism and the arts. So various forms of art. So I actually, it was crazy. We were planning to record this podcast today, and just yesterday or 2 days ago, they posted their latest podcast on the same topic. But they kind of are coming at it from a perspective of literature and pilgrimage. So she's reading through The Hunchback of Notre Dame. And anyway, so they're talking about that on the podcast, and it's fairly long and involved, but it's really cool. I really like what they're doing. I like their style. I like that they're really sort of academic about things. They're both also actually on pilgrimage right now, like on holiday, and they're over in Rome. I think they were in Paris, but anyways, she and her friend, they were talking about these things. So I really like that podcast, Risking Enchantment. And then of course, Bishop Barron, he talks about beauty all the time and evangelization through beauty and art and music and literature and all of that kind of stuff. So just all of his stuff, highly recommend.
Go do it. And also, finally, rate us and review us. So go on iTunes. If you're listening on an iPhone or anything, just click on the artwork, scroll to the bottom, and leave a review. I know it's kind of hard to ask, but not really. You just go do it, and you get it done. And if you want to say whatever you want to say, you want to make fun of your friend, make fun of your friend. It doesn't have to be about the podcast. Just give us 5 stars and review us and say our name. and you can make fun of your friend and we'll say it on air.
If you want to make fun of Father Brad and his clickbait article titles or podcast titles, you can do that too.
Amen.
Sorry, I had to say it.
Bye.